Based on hundreds of millions of real-world tests, the experts at Ookla Speedtest have spoken. T-Mobile is now the best mobile network in America. So you can keep up with all the MLB action from the ballpark to the backcountry because they've got the most advanced 5G, the most towers, and a signal that goes farther than ever. Oh, and did I mention the largest satellite-to-mobile network? They're way ahead making sure that the fans experience every pitch, play, and post-game moment. So whether you're streaming the game out and about, checking stats on the road, or experiencing ballpark perks with Magenta status, you're ready to stay connected wherever your fandom takes you. Head over to T-Mobile.com/network to switch to the best network. For baseball fans, it's better over here. Based on analysis by Ookla of Speedtest Intelligence, data first half 2025, compatible device and plan required for T-Satellite. See details at T-Mobile.com.
Shopify is a global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. And sell more with less effort thanks to the Shopify magic, your AI-powered all-star. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/redcircle, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/redcircle now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/redcircle.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino.
That's right. ChumbaCasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes.
ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Welcome to the Tool Shed, a podcast covering all aspects of fantasy baseball to help you win all of your fantasy leagues. From the MLB draft all the way to the show, we're here to help give you the edge in your dynasty leagues. Now, here are your hosts, Eric Cross and Chris Clegg.
Welcome in to episode 227 of the Tool Shed with Clegg and Cross, powered by the Blue Wire Podcast Network. I'm your host, Eric Cross, and with me, as usual, is my 80-grade co-host, Mr. Chris Clegg. Chris, how's it going, bud?
It's pretty good. It's been very hot down here and humid, but yeah, it's still good baseball weather, so I cannot complain because baseball is being played and you know, things change every day. So we just keep following it closely, and we're hitting the home stretch for fantasy leagues, which is just wild to think about. Like, I'm not really sure how it's already August or almost August at this point, but
I know, right?
Here we are.
Sure is. Yeah, it's. I just changed over the calendar in my kitchen. A little like whiteboard erase bowl calendar. I switched over to August tonight, and I was like, man, it's season's flying by. It's already 2/3 over, even further than that for minor leagues. We got a little month and a week or so left of the minor leagues. It's crazy, man. Like, if the season just started and we were doing all of our preseason rankings and all the, you know, those episodes, breakouts and sleepers and all that fun stuff that everyone loves to do every February and March, and now we're getting into the home stretch of the season. It's been a whirlwind, but we still kind of technically are mid-season, so to speak. So we decided to do a mid-season industry prospect draft, a mock draft, of course, with 12. It was me, Chris, and 12 other industry analysts, and we're going to break that all down in this episode with some great guests later on in the show. We have four guests, two at a time later on the show. We'll bring those people on in a little bit. But before we do, Chris and I will give our thoughts about our teams and picks we liked, didn't like, stuff like that, values, all that fun stuff. And before we get into all that, the usual housekeeping here. You can find us on Twitter, Chris at RotoClegg. I am at EricCross04. Show is at Toolshed Pod. If you enjoyed this podcast, please rate and review. And make sure to check out both of our personal platforms, DynastyDugout.com and ToolshedFantasy.com, for more work from each of us, including all of our Dynasty Prospect and FYPD rankings, plus daily write-ups and so much more. But let's get right into it, Chris. So again, 14 teams here. The draft order, as I pull up the draft board here again, goes Matt Eddy from Baseball America, Chris Blessing from Baseball HQ, James Anderson from RotoWire, Matt Thompson from Prospects Live, Shelby Verstrait from Baseball HQ now, a couple great writer, obviously, Jesse Roche from Baseball Prospectus, me and Chris back-to-back, 7 and 8, Jordan Rosenblum, Greg Hoogkamp, Baseball Pods at 11 spot, Zach Beck, upper Beck there at pick 12, Jeff Ponce, and Chris Welsh running at about 13, 14. So again, me and Chris back-to-back, 7 and 8. I knew there would be some sniping, and Chris sniped me on the first two times going back the way where he picks first, both in the second and fourth rounds. Got me with Kobe Mayo and Ronnie Mauricio. But we'll start with that first round here, Chris. First round went Jackson Holliday, Jackson Churio, Wyatt Langford, Dylan Cruz, Jordan Lawler, Junior Caminero, James Wood, Colt Keith, Mason Miller, Evan Carter, Paul Skeens, Colton Cowser, Sebastian Walcott, and Pete Crow Armstrong rounding it out. What were your overall thoughts of the first round?
Well, pretty chalk early on, as I kind of expected. And, you know, I was disappointed to be in the 8th spot. I was originally 2nd, then it reshuffled again and gave me 8. And so it was fine, but the tier kind of fell off a bit for me. So, you know, I wasn't surprised by Jackson Holliday going 1. I would say that is probably the pretty consensus at this point among most. I have Caminero 1, but that's not – most people don't love that, but I'm okay with that. Churio's been incredibly hot. He went number 2, so I think that's a fair spot. I think Churio's in that argument of tier 1, and I have Holliday and Caminero in, quote, tier 1, so 1A, 1B pretty much. Argue for either, but Churio is certainly approaching that, because since the tacky ball has left the Southern League, we have seen just Churio be absolutely dominant. I tweeted it out, but 446, 513, 815, 5 home runs, 12 extra base hits, 8 stolen bases, and an 87% contact rate is just stupid, stupid good. So that one is just a really good pick there. It's 2. I have no qualms with that. Wasn't surprised to see Langford and Cruz go back-to-back at 3 and 4. And then Lawler went at 5, followed by Caminero at 6, which was a great value pick, in my opinion, as my number 1 prospect. And then you got James Wood at 7, who I have at number 4. So that kind of went like my chalk top 7. And then we get to 8, and, you know, I was pretty torn. There were several options. I actually had Calzer ranked a bit higher, but I have Calzer ranked 6, which is probably going to move down based on this. Just I sat there. I was like, I don't know. Like, this exercise made me rethink and reevaluate players. And so I took Colt Keith at 8. And then it kind of opened up. Like, Mason Miller went 9, which was a surprise to me. Mason Miller is supremely talented, but there's massive injury risk here. There's massive durability concerns. So I have my concerns there about Mason Miller. Evan Carter, good pick at 10. I like Carter a lot. Paul Skeens at 11. And then Calzer at 12. Walcott at 13. Sebastian Walcott at 13 was a great helium pick. And then PCA rounded out the first round at 14. So pretty chalk at the top. And then it kind of opened up a bit. So it was fun to see the directions people went after that top 7, which was kind of my clear-cut top 7.
Yeah, that's kind of my thought process too. And yeah, Churio and even Matt Eddy, who went Jackson Holliday at 1, even tweeted out that he was considering Churio at 2, at 1 when he took Holliday. And I put out a poll, like, hey, from that, I was like, hey, who would you know, have taken if you were Matt Eddy on number 1 here? Would you take Jackson Holliday or Jackson Churio? I think it was like a 70-30 split to Holliday. But yeah, Churio, like, he went yard again today, another 2 hits. Yep. Like, he's just been absolutely mashing the ball. And doing all this at AA at the age of 19, I won't even be 20 until the off season. So this is absolutely ridiculous what Jackson Churio was doing. You know, no doubt top 5 prospect for sure. And yeah, I was wondering who was going to fall to me at 7. I knew I have a pretty clear cut top seven or eight as well. So I was wondering who I'd get at 7. And oddly enough, because we had 12 teams, and then somebody forgot to get in, so we had 2 more jump in. And then obviously the randomizer reshuffled. I stayed at 7 both times. Yeah, Chris went from 2 to 8. So I'm sure you would have gotten Junior Caminero there at two.
Yes, sir.
But yeah, James Wood fell to me at seven, who I still have as a top three prospect. So was very happy about that. Yeah, if I had gone any later in this first round, it would have been tough, because you know I still have guys like Evan Carter, Colton Cowser, and others kind of ranked pretty highly. Kobe Mayo, who you took ahead of me in round two. And I knew I almost wanted to text you because I just knew there would be no way. So I know you have Mayo like right around top 10, give or take a spot out of their way. Yeah. And so I was like looking at, I was like, all right, I pretty much know your rankings, at least the top part of them. And I'm like, I don't think he has anyone else that's still available that he has ranked higher than Mayo. So I was hoping for that Kobe Mayo would fall to me. But I ended up taking Christian Encarnacion Strand with the 2-8. But yeah, pretty chalk first round, at least the first seven or eight. And Mason Miller did surprise me. Obviously, the stuff is huge, but plenty of red flags there as well. So that could work out great, or that could look, you know, not so great. We'll see how the health, that'll pretty much be the determining factor there. You know, Carter, Skeens, Cowser, not surprising. And Walcott, you know, we'll talk with Jeff Ponce later in the episode about that pick. So I won't give away what he was saying, but I like Walcott a lot. I think everyone does. Obviously, this is going to look really good, and he could definitely be ranked much higher than this by the end of the season. Obviously, the helium is the hype train is taken off and is bearing on the tracks full speed there with Walcott. So pretty chalk first round for the most part, outside of a couple of surprises. Second round went – we won't go round by round here, but it's the top couple. Then we'll kind of dig further into our own drafts. Second round went Gabriel Gonzalez, Jackson Merrill, Curtis Meade, Noelvi Marte, Kyle Manzardo, Ricky Tiedemann, who just came back recently, looking pretty good on his rehab assignment so far. And then Chris went Mayo at pick seven. I went Christian Encarnacion Strand, pick eight. And then the rest of the round went Gavin Williams, Everson Pereira, Marcelo Mayer, Mason Wynn, Brady House, and Ethan Salas rounding out round two. What are your thoughts on that round, Chris?
Yeah, it was a fun one. I mean, we saw, you know, a variety of picks, and like I said, people kind of deviated and went different directions, which was, you know, always fun to see what people do in these kind of mocks. You know, I loved seeing Brady House there. I love seeing Ethan Salas there. A lot of really good picks. And I think people kind of just took their guys. Like, it was like, call your shots here in the second round. Like, we've kind of gone, we've had the top couple tiers, and now it's just like, take your guy. Once again, I thought Jesse got good value on Gavin Williams at 23. Like, that was a really good pick. You getting CES at 22 was solid. You know, instant contribution there. And so Noelvi Marte, really solid. Jeff took Jackson Merrill, who has been resurgent and looked really strong. So yeah, it was a fun round. I think a lot of people kind of calling their shots, calling their guys, and going with it. But there were also some values to be had, as I called out.
Yeah, I think my draft was pretty win soon. And usually in these mock drafts, whether it's, you know, ones we put on or the Welsh or whoever else it might be, you know, I usually go a little bit on the younger side, a little more on the upside projection side. But I think the first guy I took that wasn't in double A or above, I think, is Hector Rodriguez in round eight. And I think, let's see, all but I think 10 of my 13 selections so far, we're currently on the last pick of round 13, doing 20 rounds here, so 280 total picks. 10 out of my 13 have been double A or higher, I'm pretty sure. So, yeah, it's kind of a little bit different approach, but this is how the board fell to me. A lot of picks I liked, but we'll dig into our own teams here. Starting with Chris, again, pick eight for Chris, went Colt Keith, and then Kobe Mayo in the second, Walker Jenkins and Ronnie Mauricio, 3-4. Again, Chris Snipe Mauricio was a guy that I was sitting there and he was just sitting in the top of my queue. And I was like, I don't really want to take him, even though I have him ranked highly. But I was like, all right, if he falls to me at four, which 4-8 would have been pick, I think 50, as I have him ranked, you know, half of that. So I would have taken him there. But Chris Snipe me again with Mauricio in the fourth round. Then Xavier Isaac, Joey Ortiz, 5-6. 7-8 was Dalton Rushing and Noble Meyer. 9-10, Walker Martin and Kevin Alcantara. And then 11, 12, 13, Dylan Lesko, Eduardo Quintero, and Juan Brito rounding out his picks so far here. What were some picks out of your personal draft, Chris, that you liked? Any names that you were surprised fell to you where they did, or maybe some picks you would do over? Kind of what were your overall thoughts?
There was a lot that fell, and I was like, kept sitting. I'm like, I don't know about this, but Dalton rushing falling to 92 just felt a little too extreme for my liking. I love rushing, and he was at the top of my queue for several rounds and just never went. I get it. Yeah, I mean, the average hasn't been there this year. He hasn't hit for as much power, but the OBP skills are certainly there, and I think the power will come around. Like, he's still hitting the ball hard, showing awesome plate skills, and maybe he's just not swinging enough, which is obviously a big thing. But, you know, I felt pretty good about getting Dalton rushing at 92. Noble Meyer's another one. Like, if you don't want to miss out on, like, the potential Andrew Painter, like, uprise, like, you got to get Noble Meyer, who's the best prep arm in the class. Like, he may end up being the best arm in the class for all we know. It's a four-pitch arsenal, you know, big frame, righty, like, just does everything well. And so, like, first-year players, I guess some people are more hesitant on, but I took Walker Martin and Noble Meyer in the eighth and ninth round. I was a bit surprised that Kevin Alcantara fell to 133. That one, he's been resurgent. It's like the overall line is kind of like whatever on him, but he's been really good as of late and over the last couple of months. And since June 1st, he's hitting 339 with a 413 OBP and a 567 slug. He's striking out way less, down below 25%, walking 11% of the time, has six home runs, has a ton of extra base hits. And this is a 6'6" frame, just like highly athletic, where I think that Alcantara is going to hit for a ton of power. And seeing the batting average and stuff tick up and the contact rates tick up has been highly encouraging. I love to see that. So I'm also a big Juan Brito fan. So he was another one that surprised me fell as far as he did to 176. Like, I've got Brito near the top 100. It's a really interesting profile where he's grown a ton. Like, he's not 5'11 anymore. He's like 6'2", and he is hitting for power, and he's hitting for average, and he even steals some bases with really good plate discipline. So, you know, overall, I just felt like I grabbed falling values. Like, Ronnie Mauricio, you talked about at 49. It was a little further than I expected, and I scooped him. Xavier Isaac, I don't think he was falling at 64, but Joey Ortiz has been incredibly hot. So overall, like, it was just like scooping up falling values, but I was like, I don't know if I like this or not, but it's what I went with.
Yeah, like you said, these types of drafts, so I love doing these, you know, whether it's offseason, midseason, preseason, whatever. It really makes you, like, we have our rankings and we feel good about our rankings, at least for a small bit in time until we don't feel good about them anymore and we have to change them. But it really makes you question and put your own rankings to the test. Like, all right, I have this guy ranked here. Am I willing to take him here if he's, you know, available in a draft? So, yeah, I've already started to think about a few players as to why I have them either, you know, lower than I, probably should or higher than I probably should. But going into my draft here, actually, before I go to my draft, yeah, there was a few players of yours, like, outside of those first two picks, like, obviously with Mauricio and Mayo kind of sniping me there. Rushing was a guy I wanted to take, but I just had, I went with Jordan Beck. Pick before that, I just have Beck ranked a little bit higher, so I love that rushing pick. I love the Noble Meyer pick, absolutely. The upside is there for sure. Dylan Lesko was a guy I was looking at too. He was near the top of my queue when you took him in the 11th. Kevin Alcantara too, another guy that I wanted to take, but just had a couple guys that I wanted a little bit more. So liked a lot of your picks for sure. And Ortiz, yeah, he's on fire. Keston Kiercey has on fire. A lot of these top Baltimore prospects up there are on fire. That Norfolk lineup is really, really good, even after losing Kowser and Westbrook to the majors. But in my draft here, pick 7, I went James Wood, Christian Encarnacion Strand, Jordan Westberg, and Luis Angel Acuna, who just got traded to the Mets, went 3-4 there. 5-6, Tyler Locklear and Jonathan Classe, a couple of Seattle Mariners. Then went Jordan Beck and Hector Rodriguez, 7-8. My only pitcher so far, Chase Petty in the 9th. Austin Wells in the 10th. He fell a good bit there, farther than I thought he would. And then 11, 12, 13, Rainer Arias, Dominic Canzone, and Joey Loperfido are running at my 13 picks so far. You know, I'm not really too surprised at a lot of kind of where these guys were falling to me. I know Austin Wells. Well, he hasn't been bad this year. I think he's kind of been a bit underwhelming. I think that's fair to say. He fell to those pick. So we're in middle of the 10th round. So that's like pick 135 or something like that. So I was really surprised to see Austin Wells fall that far. And I know, like, with Hector Rodriguez and Class A, I know I'm higher than most on those two. Those are two guys I was kind of letting sit in my queue a little bit and see where they fell to. Class A, I know it's big risk, big reward with Class A. Contact skills need to be improved upon. Swing and miss needs to be improved upon. But obviously, there's pretty big power there, even bigger speed. So he's a guy that pick in the middle of the sixth could look really good in a year, or it could look really foolish in a year. That's the type of player that Class A is. And I think one of my favorite picks, though, was, and I know a guy you've been on for a while, is Tyler Locklear there in the fifth, I think. So that was pick 57. No, excuse me, 63. I think if Locklear didn't get hurt earlier in the year, he's a broken hamate bone. We might see him by the end of the year, but so he's been out for pretty close to 2 months now. I think his last game was like June 1st or June 2nd, and he was absolutely mashing. Huge slash line, 3, 4, 5 over each of one of those thresholds, hitting for power. I think if he didn't get hurt earlier in the year, this is a guy that's probably being taken in the third round here, maybe even the second. I think that could be a top 25 overall prospect if he didn't get hurt. So I'd like to get in Tyler Locklear there. I have him ranked in the 30s right now. And I like my Jordan Beck pick a lot too. This is a guy that's just been mashing the entire season. Obviously, the big time power, showing that he's a better hitter than I think many gave him credit for. I think he's going to be a pretty fun fantasy player within the next year or two as he makes his way up towards Colorado. And then I went with a couple upside guys and some guys that just kept falling to me. Like Dominic Canzone has fallen a good amount. I liked him there. And Loper Fido, I know he's cooled down a little bit from his early season pace, but so like that pick a good amount here. And I still got some other guys that are falling, guys that I'm still testing out to see how far they fall in my queue here. So we'll see how the next few picks go. But Chris, outside of your team, though, kind of a question that we were asking our guests later on in the show, was there a pick or two not made by you or I, that was kind of straight from both of us here, that you really love the value on? And was there another team outside of yours that you really liked the build that they did?
So there were some guys I kind of played like chicken with. Like I just kind of let them fall to kind of see where they would end up. And so like there were guys I had a lot higher on the board in some instances that I just kind of let go. I'm like, okay, like am I just too high on this guy or not?
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over at the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
With Lucky Land slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
And Carson Williams was one that he fell down to 66 in the fifth round. Obviously, like, I really like that a lot. I'm a big fan of his profile, even though there, is some swing and miss concerns. I really liked Owen Casey as well. And Greg Hukamp took both of those guys. I love Owen Casey. I think he's being highly undervalued. Shelley V taking Jackson Jobe at 89. I think Jobe's going to be a top five pitching prospect before long. So, all those were pretty solid that I really like the values on of players that I think are going to just soar up board. So those are really solid. Looking at it by team, see a lot of players that I like. Chris Blessing had a build where I liked it. Churio and Brady House to start. He had Drew Gilbert. I like that top half a lot. And then he has some upside guys as well later, like Lazaro Montes, and he took Braden Taylor, FYPD guy at 83. I like John Cruz as well with the Yankees in there. But I think the winner probably has to go to Matt Eddy, who picked out the one spot, and he's just smoked it with Jackson Holliday, Ethan Salas, Roman Anthony, Sal Frelick, Orelvis Martinez, Jet Williams, Sterling Thompson, Luis Baez, Samuel Basalo, Colin Houck, Anthony Solometo, Miguel Blyce, and Johnny Farmello. Like, that's just a really good draft that I like a ton. So, kudos to dominating out of that one spot, Matt Eddy. Great draft overall.
Yeah, Blyce was one of those names that I was playing chicken with myself, yeah, just to see where he would fall. Obviously, talent's there, but there's some red flags. And obviously, he's out for the rest of the year right now. So he was one where I'm like, all right, how far does he fall? But some values on individual players that I liked a good amount here. Chris Baseball Pod's got Connor Norby in the 10th round. I know people are pretty indecisive on Connor Norby, but I think he definitely should have gone before the 10th round there. So I like that pick a good amount. And sticking right in that 10th round, you know, Ivan Melendez by the Welsh to start the 10th round. Obviously, huge power, but huge strikeout concerns there with Melendez. So we'll see on him. And another one by the Welsh, Cam Collier in the start of the 12th round. I know it hasn't been the, you know, the easiest start to his professional career for Collier, but I still am a believer in the bat, and I think he's a good buy low in dynasty leagues moving forward. Some other picks here that I'm seeing. I think, you know, Michael Arroyo by Jeff Ponce, a pretty good pick there. I like that a lot too. And Lazaro Montes that you mentioned with Chris Blessing, I think was a good pick too. Several others, but I'll leave it at that for now. And in terms of other builds, I do like Blessings, and I like Shelley's as well. I think I can see myself taking a lot of these guys. I like a lot of the guys that she took. She went out of the five spot, Jordan Lawler, Everson Pereira. I know this is indecisive on him too. People, you know, obviously the power's big, some speed, contact rates are a little bit lower, but I do like Pereira. I mean, maybe he did go a little bit early, but I like Pereira overall. Tamar Johnson in the third, Cole Young in the fourth. He's a guy that I've undervalued, and I'm moving up my rankings right now. Cade Horton, I think, actually, that's another great value there. Cade Horton was the 13th or something pitcher off the board, and that's two in terms of overall going in the fifth round at, was that pick 61, and as the 13th arm, I think that was way too low. I think I would have taken him above probably at least the seven arms in front of him that went in the previous rounds. Then she went Logan O'Hoppe, great buy low and dynasty there. I'm still a big believer in O'Hoppe. Jackson Jobe, who Chris mentioned in the seventh. Then she went Ryan Clifford, another name I like there, big power in the eighth. Gavin Stone in the ninth, Blaze Jordan in the 10th. And then last three picks, Dylan Beavers, Zach Eloff, and Kevin Parada. So I like, definitely like the build Shelley did as well. But yeah, it's been an interesting draft so far. We still got another seven rounds to go, so we'll see how the rest of the draft kind of falls. But yeah, it's been great so far, and really been testing both Chris and I's personal rankings to see, you know, how much we believe in them and making some adjustments on the fly. But been really fun so far.
Sure has. It's been fun to follow everybody else's picks, and as well as kind of see where people value others, and kind of makes you go back to the drawing board on some people. And it's not like, I was talking to somebody, you don't just change your values based on what others say or do.
Right.
You know, you go back and you look at it and you're like, okay, did I miss something? Or is there something that I saw that maybe is not there? And you go back and just, you know, like I said, go back to the drawing board and just totally reevaluate them. So it's a fun process for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. And now we bring on the first two guests of this episode. First, from RotoWire, he is the senior baseball editor and lead prospect analyst. Also going to hear him on both of the Fantasy Baseball and the Prospects podcast for RotoWire, at RealJRAnderson on Twitter. You know him. Mr. James Anderson joins us. James, how are you?
Great. Thanks for having me, guys.
Yeah, thanks for coming on. Obviously, great to have you. And our next guest here for this little segment of the show, he is the podcast maestro, guy that pumps out all the podcasts and does the fun little bracket every spring. You know him as Baseball Pods. Chris, how you doing, man?
Doing great. Thanks for having me. It's a pleasure.
I feel like every time we have a guest on, there's always like too many Chris's in the room.
That's the truth.
I mean, 6 out of the 14 people in this mock draft are either Chris or Matt. So a lot of Chris's in this industry for sure.
Wild.
It sure is. But let's just hop right into it here. We'll start with you, James. You know, we're about 2/3 or so of the way through. I thought we'd be a little bit further than we are now, but we are nearing the end of round 13 here. James was picking out of the 3 slot there, went Wyatt Langford with the 3 pick here after Jackson Holliday and Jackson Churio went 1-2. Kind of, what was your thought process going Langford at 3? Is that kind of your plan all along, or were you hoping that Churio would fall to you there?
Yeah, I would have loved it if Churio fell to me there. I think, you know, 6 is kind of the spot I'd like to be picking. If I can't pick 1 or 2, I do kind of view Holliday as the clear 1, Churio as the clear 2, and then there's about 4 guys I'd be pretty comfortable with in the 3 to 6 range, and I just had to make the first pick of those 4. So Langford, I mean, you know, we don't have a ton of data on him in terms of pro ball, but I really do think he's a can't-miss guy, and I like the outfield eligibility there, knowing that I knew I was going to end up with a bunch of shortstops kind of in the middle rounds. And, you know, I just think the power potential there, the fact that he could be in the big leagues in, you know, less than a calendar year, all very appealing aspects going forward there. But I would have preferred to be picking 6.
Yeah, that's kind of where I thought I was going to be. I always, in these mock drafts, I always get super high, it feels like, and it makes the decisions harder for me. I don't know who I would have gone at 3. That would have been a really hard pick for me, because I think it's a big cluster. Like I still have Holliday 1, but after that, I think like the next 7 or 8 guys, you can really, you know, rank any which way. It's just a giant tier. And Holiday's even in that tier too, just leading it for me. Chris, over you picked out of the, where are you at? The 11 slot here, and went with another FYPD guy with Paul Skeens. What were your thought process behind that?
I was surprised he was there, to be honest. I definitely fade pitching in general, but when it comes to prospects, but he seems like one of the elite of the elite pitching prospects that have come out. No pitching, you know, there is no such thing as a pitching prospect, but if there is, it's Paul Skeens. I also knew I wasn't going to pick a lot of other pitchers. So I was like, all right, I'll get one right there with a bullet that I believe in. I was super happy to get him there. I thought I was going to pick the guy I picked in the second and the first. So I was kind of happy with the way that draft opened up for me, and hoped, too bad it's not a real prospect draft, but I think Skeens is going to be, I don't have to tell anyone that everyone thinks he's going to be the best. And I would also just say the pitching depth in the minors has been depleted this year, right? So for prospect purposes, it's like, that's why I thought he'd go before me, but I was happy to get him in the first round.
Man, you just made a long acronym, 10 step, even longer. There's no such thing as a pitching prospect unless it's Paul Skeens. So you gotta add the UIPS on the end of that, make that acronym even longer. But no, I'm right there with it. He's my top pitching prospect. The pitching prospect world has been very much depleted, whether it be, you know, injuries to, you know, other guy, Andrew Painter, you know, Daniel Espino, you know, Tiedemann, who just came back, and obviously all the graduations. So yeah, I think Skeens is the dude there. So not surprised to see him go that high in this draft.
Yeah, for sure. So there's some good picks. Obviously, kind of at the top, you have that cluster, as you might expect. I have like a clear top 7, which I saw because I'm picking 8. And I when I got to 8, I was kind of like, oh, like I don't really love any of the options anymore. So that was a tough for me. But it was a good first round. Were there any picks that surprised either of you in the first round? James?
Always want to try to keep it positive. I think honestly there were a few, but Mason Miller, I mean, I think it's kind of a false narrative that anyone is really sort of sleeping on Mason Miller's skills. Just if we're if we're lining up all the pitching prospects and saying like all these guys are going to pitch 200 innings next year, like who are you going to take? I'd probably take Mason Miller first, honestly. He's just absolutely electric, but just, you know, I've been doing this a long time. I know you guys have too. I just usually this amount of red flags on a guy when it comes to durability and just stacking innings. Like I would bet a ton of money on Mason Miller never being a guy that you can consistently rely on for 150, 160 inning seasons. And I think there's obviously some downside beyond even that. Like, I'm never the type of person that's ended up with Lance McCullers in leagues or Jacob DeGrom the past like 3 years. Like I shy away from that type of extreme injury risk on the pitching side. You know, to each their own. I definitely recognize the talent with Mason Miller, but wouldn't have been a first round consideration for me. And you can even factor in just how old he is. You know, we're not talking about like a guy who's 21. We're talking about a guy who's like already in his mid 20s, and there's just been a long track record of him just not having the durability necessary to lock those innings.
And that's my biggest concern as well with Mason Miller. It's not the talent level. We've seen him pitch at a high level when he's been on the mound, and I don't think there's any denying the ability there with Miller on the mound, but the injuries do highly concern me. The durability concerns me as well. So that probably was the biggest surprise for me as well. Chris, was there another pick that stood out to you that was a surprise first rounder?
No, not that surprising. I mean, I'll stamp the Mason Miller like fade for me. Probably wouldn't have been a guy I took in the top 50 or 60, to be honest. The other one that surprised me a little bit, although I can see it, was Pete Crow Armstrong to the Welsh. I like Pete Crow Armstrong a lot. PCA is an incredible athlete. I just think he probably could have, I mean, I think he's just a little bit further down for me in my personal ranking. So he's not quite in a first round talent for me. He'd more be, end of the second round, beginning of the third. So nothing wrong with PCA. Just thought you could have maybe he might, and maybe where he was picking, he really wanted him. Maybe he probably wouldn't have made it back. So maybe that's why he picked him there.
Yeah. Jeff probably talked a little bit about that, but he just basically said that the guys he liked went off the board and he was like, Walcott's fuzzy and got the upside. So take a shot.
Yeah, I'm sure we'll be talking with Jeff about that here later on the show when he comes on. But, James, go back over to you now. Now, obviously, your first, eight, maybe even nine picks were all guys that are going to be already in the majors or should be in the majors within the next probably year and a half or so. And then after that, you started going with some of the younger upside guys like Stafura in round 10, you know, Joendry Vargas round 11. But you know, your first nine picks, you went Wyatt Langford, Mason Wynn, Luis Matos, Brandon Pfaadt, AJ Smith-Shawver, Matt Shaw, Brock Wilkin, Max Meyer, then Jefferson Cairo in round 9. Was that kind of your approach there to get some more, you know, the win now or the win soon pieces and then kind of go with the upside guys later on in the draft?
I mean, I never really have like a this is how I'm going to do it type of thing with these, but it always seems to kind of play out this way where, you know, we're not playing for money here. We're not building actual dynasty league teams. So a lot of people want to get, you know, a guy who's really kind of ascending in the lower levels. Maybe I think you could also look at just the way the picks fell. you know, I don't really have Marcelo Meyer valued in this range, but it, you know, maybe you could say there was like a teardrop there. But you know, I was just trying to go best available, and it seemed like a lot of the times, especially on the pitching side, that was guys whose star has maybe fallen a little bit. And then on the FYPD side, you know, if you're kind of confident in your evaluations, you can definitely land multiple guys from the most recent class because there's going to be a lot of diverging opinions there. But yeah, I didn't really go into it with a plan, but I tend to sort of rank guys who are close to the majors higher in general. So not surprised that I ended up with a bunch of those guys.
Now, out of all those guys, James, was there anyone in particular that you were just really surprised fell to you where they did?
Not really. You know, I think it's a pretty sharp room. You know, we've all been doing these for a while. I didn't think there were, you know, a ton of surprises. I mean, I guess Jefferson Caro and Max Meyer, and, you know, Meyer I got in the eighth, Caro I got in the ninth. I do kind of feel like those were pretty good values. But at the same time, like, I've been talking about this for years. I know you guys have too. Just catchers, there is no such thing really as like getting a good value on a catching prospect, because there's so many of them. There's so many guys that you could make a strong argument for. I think Caro is one of the five or six best catching prospects, and I probably got him as like the 10th catching prospect off the board. But you know, Max Meyer, like someone who's kind of been out of sight, out of mind. There's no fun in really taking Max Meyer in a prospect mock, but you know, he's big league ready as soon as he gets healthy. So I like those two values, I guess, but wasn't really that surprised.
Yeah, I like that Meyer one especially. That's kind of one I was going to point to, because like you said, he's been out of sight, out of mind for, you know, over a year now because of the injury and surgeries. But we'll be back in 2024, and this was one of the top pitching prospects in the game for a reason. So he's one of my favorite, you know, buys right now in Dynasty League. So I like that pick a lot.
Chris, any thoughts on your side of the draft over there, of anybody that you were surprised fell to you at any point, or any pick that you were just really loved the value on?
I mean, nothing. Once again, I agree with James. This is a sharp room. I was surprised I got Josue Depala in the third, just because of the helium that's there with him. Ponce turned me on to him in the beginning of the year, so I've been scooping him up wherever I can, and shout out to Jeff for that flag. I've got him in Zavala on just about every dynasty team because of that. But I like getting him in the third, so I was a little surprised about that. I love getting Noelvi in, you know, where I got him. I thought, like I said, I considered him at 11. So it was nice to get him there. And, you know, but all these guys, like, are generally within their range. I don't think there's I didn't see anyone fall where I was like, oh my God, how did that guy get there? How do we forget about that guy? That didn't happen in this draft that I saw in anyone. I will say I probably am higher. Maybe I'm higher on Enrique Bradfield than some for fantasy purposes. So I was surprised he lasted a little bit. I like him more than some of the other college bats that went ahead of him. So that's another one that I'm hoping that hit tool comes through, and with that 80 grade speed and defense, you've got, you know, center fielder of the future.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you want to get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of the Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play the Godfather, now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
VGW Group, no purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions, 18+.
For sure, yeah. It's always interesting to see people's strategy. And some people just may just go straight best available. But a couple times I left, like, my top available on the board, just kind of see where they would go. Guys that I'm like, am I way too high on this guy? So I kind of let him fall. And like, honestly, like, I don't look at a ton of other rankings. So I just kind of like, this was process kind of like, oh, let me kind of see like where others value. So like Carson Williams, for instance, is one like I had on the board for like two rounds, like at the very top. He was probably like, I had him like as a third round value. So he's kind of set there, and I like floated him and never took him. And somebody was like, why'd you take Xavier Isaac over him when you have Williams higher? I was like, I really just want to see where Williams would fall to. And so I don't know if anybody else does that, but that's something that I'm toy around with in mock drafts for sure.
No, I absolutely did as well. There's been a few guys, there's still a few in my queue that I'm still trying that out with right now. So, you know, it's definitely, it helps, you know, kind of better my own process. And yeah, you know, it makes you, yeah, like you said, Chris, like makes you think like, hey, am I too high in this guy? You know, let's see where these other 13 sharp minds, of how long they pass on this particular player and how far down the board he drops. So, yeah, that's definitely something I've tried a few times already. And I still got three guys in my queue right now that I'm currently testing that theory out with. Actually four, but I just took Joey Loperfido in the 13th. He was one of them, but I still got three more that I'm seeing where they fall to. But next question here, outside of your own teams, were there any picks that you saw that you just thought, oh man, that's a really good value there? Chris, how about you?
Yeah, like I said, there was nothing that really shot that I was I've been surprised that I haven't had that heavy of a reaction. But I love where James got Brandon Fott. I still think he's like just very, very good and is figuring out. He will figure it out. When he figures it out, he's going to be nasty. That team's going to be good. The context is going to be good. I think I was a big fan of that pick. I wasn't really looking at pitching. Like I said, once I got Skeens, I was going to bang out batters for a while. But I was surprised that Fott fell to him where he did. And then maybe it's a little early to say to be a value, but I was Curtis Meade. I have him probably a lot, 4 or 5 spots higher than he went. And when you're talking about the top of the draft, that's a lot of spots. So I thought Upper Beck got a really good deal with Meade. So those were two for me that kind of stood out as okay. Those were good, really good picks where they went.
Yeah, Meade went 17th overall to Beck. So Meade, obviously a guy that was really good, you know, last couple of years. He had a little bit of an injury he was dealing with early in the year, so he kind of scuffled a little bit offensively, but he's coming back strong last month or so. So yeah, definitely, I like that pick. So he was actually a guy I had him on my short list for my pick, which was about 5 picks after that. So not surprised to see him go that early either.
I'll just say, as someone who's not as confident as the rest of the three people on this call in his rankings, I reached out to James for some advice recently on a trade that I made where I was moving in the Devil's Rejects league. I moved Tristan Casas for Meade, and I ended up being able to get Orelvis Martinez and Roderick Arias out of it. And just because I thought that was Casas is tough to move, and you know, he's a stud and he's really starting to take off. But yeah, my question was, is Meade back really? And you know, appreciate the advice you gave me, James.
Yeah, absolutely. Guys that I thought went, you know, maybe a bit too late. Big shouts to Jesse for the DeShane Baz, Emmett Sheehan, Brian Wu run. I always forget with the guys when we're doing this and we're not doing like 50 innings or we're not doing the 45 days active. So like I always forget about Baz and Wu, but I would have taken them earlier. And then Jet Williams, that was kind of, I guess, the one guy Chris was sort of talking about letting Carson Williams slide. I was only trying to let Jet Williams slide about 6 picks and get him on the way back. But, he still got scooped up before I could take him. By Matt Eddy. So,
Where did Williams went on the 6-7 turns? So that would have been what pick? Quick math,
84.
Yes, yeah. Joe, well, he's really heating up too. He kind of was like the OBP has been phenomenal the entire season, but really, you know, the average ticking up, power ticking up. He's still running wild, still walking a ton. So, I think he had another home run today, if I saw correctly. So, yeah. Jet Williams was a pretty solid pick for sure. But I think that's going to wrap up this segment here. Thank you, gentlemen, both for coming on and recapping this draft with us. Again, you can follow them on Twitter. James is at RealJRAnderson, all of his work over on RotoWire, of course, and Chris at BaseballPods and baseball-pods.com. Gentlemen, thank you so much.
Thanks for having me, guys.
All right, let's bring on our next two guests here, starting with my former podcast co-host on the Five Tool Pod from so many years ago. He is a dynasty baseball writer and ranker over at Baseball Prospectus and co-host of the Tino podcast, There Is No Tomorrow, Mr. Jesse Roche. How you doing, buddy?
I'm great. Thanks for having me on. We're excited to talk about this mock.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for coming on. And our last guest of the evening, last but certainly not least, you can find all of his work over at Baseball America. He's traveling all over the country, all over the world, looking at prospects. Mr. Jeff Ponce at Jeff Ponce BA on Twitter. Jeff, how you doing, man?
Pretty good, Eric. How are you, man? Glad to be on.
Good, good. Fisk, I haven't seen you in forever because usually we link up somewhere. We haven't had just a link up at a field yet this season, but
yeah,
we still got another like month and a half left of the minor league season, so maybe we'll meet up at New Hampshire or Hartford or wherever.
I think this season it might be worth me making some late season trips to Portland based on the way that squad looks. So
yeah,
certainly New Hampshire. I've been in New Hampshire a lot this year. Just unfortunately, lots of rain too.
Yeah, hasn't been a great summer up here in the Northeast, either raining or just like super hot and humid. I know Chris and Jesse are both used to that, but not so much up here, bro. We're not having though today was it nice down there too, Jeff in Massachusetts?
Yeah, it was like 75, 80. It was like perfect.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, finally like
94. It feels like 110,
100% humidity.
Yeah.
That's what we had. Well, not 90s. That's what we had been having. Just like the super hot and muggy. But then today I walked outside at like 9 a.m. to go grab coffee and take the kids out. And I was just like, man, this is great out here. Finally, it's, you know, late July. We're finally getting a nice day. But
yeah.
Anyway, let's dig right into the mock draft here again. So Jesse was out of the six slots. Mm-hmm. And Jeff was way back at pick 13. Jeff, we'll start with you. You went with one of the buzzier names in all of prospect world right now, Sebastian Walcott at pick 13. And then wrap that around with the 2-2, Jackson Merrill. What was your what were you thinking there with Sebastian Walcott? Obviously, the talent's off the charts. Was that kind of your game plan going in? You think you'd get him there, or is that just how the board fell to you?
Yeah, I think when you're picking in the back end here, there's like some premium names that go off the board. I'll say in like the top seven here. And then it's a hodgepodge of a handful of players that I think were viable there. I went with the guy I felt that has the most upside, kind of on a kick right now with teenagers with 70 raw. Just like I like betting on impact. I do think there's some skills there, some twitch as well. It's a big league body. So, I mean, you know, worst case scenario, I went after the new version of like Marco Luciano, but I guess he's a big leaguer, you know, already made it up. So, but I do think there's, you know, impact here. This is a guy that I have inside the top 20 of my personal rankings, regardless of context or format, he's right there for me. So I'm betting on the impact and the ability to make, you know, solid quality of contact pretty consistently and solid swing decisions with a twitch. So yeah, I like Walcott there. Other guys I thought about were Merrill, Pete Crow Armstrong was another option. And Kobe Mayo actually passed in my mind as well, just based on the season he's having, regardless of the first, you know, 2 weeks or whatever that he struggled in AAA, you know, was incredible at AA at 21 years old.
Yeah. I texted Chris. I saw that the way that I was following is I wanted Mayo there at the 2-8, but I was like, I know there's no way that Chris was going to pass on Mayo. That was the bad thing with picking back to back with my podcast co-host here. But yeah, Walcott, obviously, is one of the trendier names right now. So would you say, you know, let's fast forward middle of next season, Jeff, do you think Walcott is pretty much a consensus, you know, top 10 prospect for fantasy at that point in time?
Yeah, I think so. I think he's trending there now, frankly. You know, and I think if you look at like some of the batted ball data that, you know, I've had an opportunity to have access to and just, you know, check out, like it checks. I mean, everything's there. Production's been really good as well. Scouting reports and feedback that we're getting from scouts is good. So it kind of checks all boxes for me. And, you know, I don't think it's all that dissimilar from, you know, what we saw over the course of this season and last with like a junior Cameron Arrow or something like that, where just all the underlying numbers screened it, production screened it, and he's passing the eye test too. So yeah, Walcott is a guy for me that I think probably, I don't know, you know, trending toward top 10, but I think he's definitely top 20 for a lot of people.
I know his age he's so young, even at the complex level at, you know, just 17, just turned 17 not too long ago. Are you concerned about the contact issues that he's having? Because his contact rate is about 52% right now in the complex league, and it's going down. It's trending down pretty steadily, almost like week by week at this point. But, I mean, obviously he's incredibly young, but the contact and approach
related issues. What did you have for a contact rate?
52%.
That's 70.
That's, well, all right. That's not what FanGraphs says, for example.
His end zone's about 80.
Oh, okay.
Chase is about 33%. I had the numbers pulled yesterday too.
I can't imagine that adds up. Like 70% contact with a 37% strikeout rate doesn't really add up to me. But maybe, I mean, maybe.
Unless he swung and missed a ton yesterday.
Oh, yeah, obviously that would be a lot.
But speaking of Junior Caminero, though, that Jeff mentioned, that's who Jesse took at pick six. And Jesse, I want to thank you because you made my decision at seven much easier, because I was really going to be having a hard time picking between Caminero and Wood, who I have back to back. So were you surprised, though, to see Caminero fall to you there at pick six?
Yes, I definitely was. I was expecting him to go in the top few picks. I have him at two in my rankings right now. And I really thought that that was where the community or the industry was kind of trending as a consensus. Granted, there are a lot of fantastic options. I really think that there is a pretty firm top six. And then it kind of becomes, I think Wood is definitely like firmly at seven. Or, sorry, I think Wood's at six. I have Lawler at seven. So I think it's a very firm grouping here for me. And I think Caminero is right there with, I think he's ahead of the two college draftees, you know, Langford and Cruz. And obviously Chirillo is just on fire right now. And I would not blame anyone for taking any of those players over Caminero, because Caminero is unlikely to provide speed or stolen bases at the major league level when he gets there, but the power is just off the charts. And, you know, if he can do a better job of actually gaining that power in the air in games, I think he's just going to, I mean, he's already taking off. I think the sky's the limit. I like internally, I was trying to like comp him to someone. I feel like he feels a lot like Rafael Devers as a hitter. I don't know if that really flies, but I think that kind of like feels like the approach. There's some approach related issues. There's a little bit of swing and miss there, but the power is so crazy. And he is sort of like a hit over power bat in that he kind of sprays. I think he kind of comps a little bit to Devers. Of course, they're both third basemen, so that may just be the lazy comp that in me.
Yeah, so the interesting first round, as you mentioned, it was a tier of seven for me, and I was at eight, so I didn't I didn't love anything after seven. I got there, I was like, oh, that defined a tier for me, because I was sitting there. I was like, I took Colt Keith at eight, but it was like, much would have rather had James Wood at eight, who Eric took at seven, but you know, it was what it was. Was there a pick in the first two rounds that surprised either of you? I'll ask Jeff first, if there was a pick that surprised you that went as high as they did, or maybe somebody that didn't go in the top two rounds that surprised you?
I would say the pick that surprised me the most in the top two rounds was Gabriel Gonzalez by Welsh at 15 overall. Yeah. It was the first pick in the second round. Just not my style of player, so I'm not going to say that it was a bad pick. Just it's, you know, hit power, really, really super aggressive approach. He's a little bit older, a little bit more filled out too. Yeah, I mean, I think that he's a good player, probably going to be a fantasy viable guy, definitely like a top 100 guy, but more like back end of the top 100 for me, like out to like 125, I think is a reasonable spot. So some people are higher on him. I know Welsh has probably gotten eyes on him out there in Arizona, so I'm sure he has his reasons, but that was one that kind of stuck out to me because I figured Merrill might be going. I thought it was going to be, when I saw PCA go, I was like, oh, it's going to be Merrill now, and then I was able to grab him with the next pick.
Yeah, I have Gonzalez at 86. So I thought that was – I've seen him trending high for some people. I just don't think that the hit – I think obviously the production's there. I don't think that the underlying data is supporting his type of production or supporting what people think he may become. I think some people – if he's being picked this high, they're thinking he may become like a six hit or a six power, give or take. And I just don't think that anything in his profile screams either of those right now. But so it was, I was actually going to say Gabriel Gonzalez, because I heard earlier Mason Miller was discussed. Mason Miller, I thought, was a bit of a reach as well. The health is a very real concern with Mason Miller. And I think, you know, yeah, the stuff's huge, and, you know, he has proximity when he's healthy, but that's the big question. Like the health, and is he going to be able to handle a Stars workload? Because he legitimately has never shown that as a pro.
Any other besides Gonzalez, any other name that stuck out to you, Jesse?
That wasn't a big reach for me. Honestly, I thought it went pretty sort of chalk for the most part. I wasn't really opposed to most of these picks. I personally thought Mason Wynn went a little higher than I would have felt comfortable drafting him, but I know James is very high on Wynn, and I've been high at times on Wynn. I've seen him have impact in games. We saw him have impact in spring training in games where, you know, he hit this a monster home run. I know that there's home run power there. I just don't know how it's all going to come together for him at the major league level in terms of hit and power. He kind of feels like he could be a Tommy Edman type at the major league level, which, I mean, is good. That would be a great outcome. But we've also seen the downside of Tommy Edman, especially this year.
Right. Yeah, he's probably one of the prospects that I yo-yo on the most in my rankings. If I do like a little like plot chart of where these prospects go like every month in my rankings, like he's probably the one that has the greatest variance. Whenever I think I'm too low on him, I bump him up. Then I think I'm too high on him. Yes, he's definitely a hard one to rank. Obviously, very good player, both real life and fantasy. But yeah, definitely
he's on an absolute tear right now.
Oh, he is. He's absolutely demolishing the ball right now. Probably see him up with St. Louis at some point over the last 2 months of the season.
Yeah, but his hard hit rate still in AAA is around 30%.
Yep.
So, you know, I don't know. I just think that the impact, it will flash, but I don't think it's very consistent.
Yep. All right, let's dig it further into each of your draft boards so far. Again, Jeff out of the 13 slot went Sebastian Walcott, Jackson Merrill, Colson Montgomery, Henry Davis, Brooks Lee, Roderick Arias, Jared Jones, Kyle Teal, Michael Arroyo, Austin Charles, Zach Veen, and Luke Adams so far with his 12 picks. Again, we're nearing the end of round 13, so Jeff's on the clock here in a couple of picks. But out of all those picks so far, Jeff, were there any picks that you really loved, or any picks that you were surprised that particular player fell to you, or anything along those lines?
I really like the Colson Montgomery pick. I think that Montgomery's probably about to blow up. Still finishing up his rehab. He's got 17 games in now. I think he's going to be up in Double A probably next week. It wouldn't shock me if he gets called up on tomorrow or Tuesday. But, you know, tons of walks, walking more than he's striking out, contact, there's power there, really good reports. This is another guy that, you know, is sort of a standout athlete as a prep, you know, multi-sport guy, you know, like a scorer slasher in basketball. Not just like a white guy shooter. So he's a good athlete. I think people kind of underrate that a little bit. He was kind of just sold as a hit tool guy. I think there's a ton of power projection here. We're starting to see the frame fill out a little bit more. So I think when I look back, this could be a guy that, you know, end of the year, some point next year, could potentially be, you know, ranked in the top 20 or so. And we're getting some people that are clamoring for that now. So, I like the Montgomery pick a lot. I like the gamble I took on Roderick Arias. The reports prior to him getting injured were great. Definitely a top 100 prospect, maybe a top 50 type guy. And then, you know, I took a gamble here on Zach Veen. It's kind of funny, like, how much Veen has fallen off the map. Now that we have an injury to explain it, I'm willing to sort of, you know, buy the dip a little bit here with Veen. You know, still baseball skills there, still on base ability, base running ability. I still think there is power projection. You know, how healthy he'll be over the next year plus, we'll see. But it could be the kind of thing that, like, in 2-3 years from now, you know, he could come back in a big way. I don't think his career is over or anything like that. So kind of like Veen where I got him, because that was like around pick 153, somewhere around there. So not a bad grab.
Yeah, Veen falls into that grouping for me where it's like the guys that, you know, have the stuff to like really shoot up rankings, but like one or two things are holding him back. Like another one I have in that grouping is like Mick Abel. I'm like, oh, I'm still holding on hope that he can put it all together. And obviously I've seen Veen a bunch, you know, out in the AFL and in Double A for Hartford. So yeah, Veen's one I'm still holding on hope for. I have up the number rankings a little bit, but still like the player overall, and hopefully he can bounce back. So I definitely echo your kind of buy low sentiment there on Zach Veen. And the other one I mentioned was Arias too. Like obviously, like we mentioned earlier, he was really taken off for the injury and has, you know, that really good blend of skills all across the board. Yeah, everything you hear about him has been pretty good as well. So yeah, I like the pick a lot. And Brooks Lee too, another I think a sneaky good pick, guy that I've personally underrated too much, and I'm kind of correcting that now. But the guy he's on a tear as well. You know, batted ball skills are good. Obviously, the approach is good. Like one of those guys that gets overlooked, he doesn't provide really any speed, but the bat just so good, both, you know, hit and power. So I think he's a guy that, you know, personally, I'm going to have jump way up my rankings next time as I underranked him personally. But Jesse, how about you? Anybody on your draft board here that you were really digging the picks here? And I'll tell the picks right now. After Cameron Arrow in the first round, you went Gavin Williams, Shane Boz, Emmett Sheehan, Brian Wu, Marco Luciano, Connor Phillips, Oswald Peraza, Michael Bush, who had two more home runs today. Hopefully they trade him before this podcast comes out. Please, Mark Vientos. Yeah, someone just trade Michael Bush. Like they're acquiring every middle infielder known the main just to not play him. But Michael Bush in the ninth and Vientos in the 10th. Sedan Rafael, who's on a bender right now, too, in the 11th. Jonathan Aranda and Daniel Espino was your last pick in the 13th there. What picks there stand out to you, Jesse?
So I picked a ton of pitchers.
You did. You probably have the most.
I'm sure I have the most. I can't imagine.
Jordan Rosenblum has six. You have probably right around six. One, two, three, four. You have six also. Yeah, so yeah. You're duking it out for most pitchers there.
Yeah.
I think another one.
I think it's sort of one of those things where I should have remembered that people just don't take pitching in mocks very often. You know, just it always falls. And I think if I were to redo a pick, and it's a pick I really like, it would have been Shane Boz. I would have I'm certain he would have fallen farther. I would bet that there would be people that either just forgot about him in general, which I hate to say it, because I'm sure the room remembers Shane Boz, but you know, he's not technically rookie eligible in a lot of sites, but under our rubric here, he hasn't eclipsed 50 innings pitch, so he is eligible for this mock. I think he's a top 30 prospect still. He'll be back at the beginning of next year. He, I think, has arguably the best stuff of any prospect eligible pitcher in all of baseball, and he's proven it at the major league level. You know, if he was fully healthy, he'd be in the starting rotation for the Rays and likely being awesome. So I really liked the Boz pick, but I think that I would have preferred to probably have gone with a bat there, and my pick would have been Walker Jenkins at that spot. I think Chris may have taken Walker Jenkins,
yeah,
actually. So that would have been my pick, and I would have tried to let pitching kind of fall to me, which it mostly did. And I do like the arms. I think generally with my draft and my mock, I've taken a lot of players with proximity. I think what I found in this specific room is people don't care about proximity in this room. I value proximity a lot in fantasy because you get actual production for your fantasy team right away or very soon. You know, a lot of these pitchers are in the major league level right now and performing. Gavin Williams, Emmett Sheehan, Brian Wu, and they are flashing real good stuff at the major league level. There's definitely like adjustments they're going to need to make. And, you know, if they make those adjustments, they can be players who are impact fantasy assets very quickly. You know, Sheehan just came off a very good start the other day. So I'm all about trying to scoop up these types of players that I hate to say, it's strange to say, but they're post hype because people move on so fast. You know, one bad start, Emin Sheehan has one bad start and everyone just jumps off the bandwagon that there was a massive bandwagon for Emin Sheehan. And that's just absurd because the underlying stuff is still there. He just is a rookie at the major league level. You're going to have bad starts. So I'm not necessarily against drafting all this pitching, and a lot of it I really like. I really love Connor Phillips. I think he'll be up very soon. His stuff is ridiculous, and if the command gains continue to hold, kind of like waffling in AAA, I think he can be an excellent fantasy arm. He has a modern arsenal with a, you know, big fastball, great breaking balls, and a sneaky changeup. And Daniel Espino is another player who I still have in my top 100. I'm certainly in the minority there. But the stuff, if healthy, if he returns to full health, he arguably has the two best pitches in all of minor league baseball right now, with his fastball and his slider. So I'm 100%. If you're going to be gambling on players that are in the DSL and being taking them ahead of Daniel Espino, who has arguably just as much risk, of course, it's a different type of risk. I'm 100% okay with taking Daniel Espino at this juncture in particular. You know, I got him way down in round 13. So, yes, taking pitching is incredibly risky because pitchers break. But, you know, if they have proximity and if the upside is massive, if they hit, then I think it's worth the gamble. But yeah, I do think that, you know, I do have a very boring draft. I think a lot of players are either in the major leagues or in AAA on the cusp who have been in major leagues this year. I don't have any fun DSL complex league low A players that are popping.
Hey, boring sometimes wins though. This doesn't flashy doesn't always win. It can win, obviously, but yeah, boring is not a bad way to go.
And I think there's something to be said about a build like this in fantasy because you can really see what you have in these players very quickly at the major league level. And then, you know, maybe they eclipse rookie eligibility and you can kind of replace them in your minor league roster and churn through the bottom of your roster, which I really love doing in all my dynasty leagues. So I'm all about trying to get players that with proximity that have shown the type of qualities to be successful major leaguers, but they haven't quite maybe found that success yet. And I think that people sleep on those types.
100%. I think there's upside in proximity. There's upside in old boring, and there's a lot of ways to win and be successful.
Yeah. I think Michael Bush is probably the definition of old boring and proximity and all that.
Get him out of town, man. Let's trade him somewhere we can play. Send him to Cincinnati. That seems like a fun
play. Oh, man. Yeah, that'd be great.
I'll take literally any other team besides the Dodgers at this point. Just give him a chance to play. Oh, my word.
All right. So let's wrap up with this. Let's pick two of your – let's do this. We'll do a favorite pick that wasn't yours at any point in the draft and a favorite overall build that wasn't yours. So, Jeff, you can go first and give you a minute to kind of surf through. But a favorite pick that you saw that may have stood out, and then an overall build that was not yours that you really liked.
Sure. I like Cross's Jordan Beck pick in the seventh round. I saw him a couple weeks ago for a series. It's the first time I've seen him since he was in the Cape in 2021. Just improved as a hitter. Power was there. He's a little bit aggressive. I think it was also like he had hit three home runs in the first three games I saw him. So at that point he was kind of hitting beach balls and hunting a little bit, but, there's a ton of power in the point of contact. And I mean, it's funny cause he hits like neck and neck with like Hunter Goodman and he had Keo Fernandez. So it's, pretty powerful middle of the order there for Hartford. And, you know, I think back in terms of the balance between hit tool, power and approach probably is, you know, the best of the three. You factor in, you know, his ability to play all three outfield positions. He played a pretty good center field with Yankee on right and Hunter Goodman in left. So he had a lot of ground to cover there over the course of the week. Pretty twitchy. There's power. I think there's some speed on base ability. He's going to strike out, but, you know, I'm going to bet on the guy with impact and tools to sort of make it. And I think Beck is a little underrated. You know, I know it's a Rockies prospect, et cetera, but when their guys are good, you know, they do play them right away. They get opportunities. They have a lot of homegrown guys. Whether they win or not, it's a different story. And it's a great ballpark, not only for power, but, you know, also for just, you know, higher average on balls in play for hitters that hit there.
Yeah, I'm a big fan of the Beck pick as well. I got Beck ranked a little bit higher than that. Yeah, I think he's one of the better prospects in that org, so pretty solid there.
In terms of build, I actually liked James's team. I really like Chris's team too.
Which Chris? Master,
the host here, but
Chris Clegg. Okay.
There's like
12 different Chris in this draft.
He's got, a couple of my guys up top here in Keith and Mayo, players that I like a lot. I like the rushing pick. I thought the Walker Martin pick was great, where he got Kevin Alcantara, I thought was pretty good. Just overall, I like the sort of upside that he had across the board. Sort of the same thing with Isaac and Mauricio, et cetera. So I liked most of his picks. I thought it was one of the better drafts thus far, though I know we still got 6-7 picks left, depending upon where you are.
Cool. Well, I appreciate that. Jesse, over to you. Who was your favorite pick that was not your own?
I would say that my favorite pick was probably actually Kobe Mayo. I know we've talked about him a bunch. I was really kind of hoping he'd fall to me at 2-9. Of course, Eric would have taken him at 2-8. So
Chris.
It wasn't going to happen any which way. So I really liked that pick. I mean, there's been a lot of very good picks in this mock, but that was probably my favorite value. I really liked Roman Anthony at the top of the third round. I believe that would have been 29th overall. I think he's 20th for me. I think he's a guy who by the end of the season is going to be potentially a top 10 prospect, especially if he continues performing in high A. And because the hit and power upside here is incredibly impressive. I know that the prospect team at Baseball Prospectus is very high on Roman Anthony. They have him ranked 9th in their real life rankings. And, I have him 20th, so I'm not as high as the prospect team is on him. But, it's great bat-to-ball ability, very good approach. The power is coming in games, and the power is very impressive. And their speed. So he really checks all the boxes. And, I, even after ranking him at 20th, I'm like, maybe I should have put him higher. He's that type of player. I think he is one of the biggest helium players this year. I know that, Chris, you were incredibly in on Roman Anthony coming into the season, and this is looking very good for you right now. But yeah, he's checking so many boxes for me that he was one of my favorite picks as well. And I guess that brings me to my favorite build. And my favorite build was probably Eddie's. I think, Eddie's very top of the draft, I loved. Obviously, Jackson Holliday at first overall. It's hard not to really dislike that pick. But then Ethan Salas was his second-round pick. Salas is doing unreal things as a 17-year-old, a young 17-year-old in full-season ball, which we just don't ever see. As a catcher, too, and just dominating low A or single A. So just truly incredible. I think that there's huge hit power upside here. And from a real life perspective, Salas is just, we haven't really seen a prospect like this in a long time. So he's a really special player. So I really love those first three picks. Of course, Anthony was his third pick. Sal Frelick was his fourth pick. I think it's another fantastic pick. I don't think he has maybe massive fantasy upside, but the hit tool is amazing. I mean, it's incredible bat to ball ability. I've loosely comped him to someone like a Stephen Kwan in a lot of ways. And, Stephen Kwan has been a quality fantasy player. And we've seen what he can do in terms of his upside. And I really think that Frelick even has a touch more power than Kwan. So I think that, we could see him being like a better version of Stephen Kwan. And that has a lot of fantasy value that often will get very underrated. But then Orelvis Martinez, I thought was a very good pick. He's a player who's kind of emerging for Toronto. He's really coming into his own this year. I know that Jeff has been all about Orelvis Martinez this year. It's really he's kind of returning to his former prospect glory, I suppose, which is crazy to say for a player so young. Then of course, Jet Williams, and then Sterling Mark Thompson, Luis Baez, Basayo, Hawk, those were all just very good picks that I was kind of looking at even with my picks. The only pick I really disliked for his draft is Solometo. And that even that pick wasn't, you know, at that where he was selected, it wasn't necessarily a bad pick. So really liked Eddie's draft. Of course, I also liked your draft too, Chris. So yours would have been like one of them as well.
And Jesse, I'm sorry to burst your bubble, but breaking news. Well, not to anybody listening to this tomorrow on Monday, but right now the Angels have acquired both Randall Grichuk and CJ Krohn. So no Nolan Shinwell this year from the looks of it here. Well,
there
they
you
got
go.
Their first baseman.
Mason Albright and Jake Madden heading to the Rockies.
Yep.
And now I am just ignoring those players for fantasy.
Albright was actually somebody I was looking at. He'd been pretty decent recently and just done now.
Pitching prospects going to the Rockies. Just no thank you. Like Chase Dolander. Poor Chase Dolander. Still feel bad for the guy.
And the Angels loading up to miss the playoffs once again. I don't know what the odds are, but I'm gonna place a bet on them still missing the postseason because I just have zero faith in the Angels ever doing anything like good. They've wasted Trout, so I'm hoping Ohtani goes somewhere else so he doesn't get wasted too.
Where are these players? Where's Grichuk gonna play? Is he just gonna be like a lefty only hitter? Is he gonna be like a short side platoon bat? Like
maybe.
I don't know. How's this gonna work?
Who knows?
But... be interesting to see. I mean, I guess Taylor Ward just got injured, so.
Yeah, he just got hit in the face. So.
Yeah, so
yeah, unfortunate. But I think that's going to wrap up this segment, though, and the show. Jeff, Jesse, thank you both for coming on and sharing your thoughts and your wisdom here. Obviously, you should be following both of these fine gentlemen at Jeff Ponce, BA, at J.A. Roach, number 6, and their work on Baseball America and Baseball Prospectus, respectively. Man, that's a hard thing to say, those two words back to back. Wow. But gentlemen, thanks both for coming on. Have a good night.
Thank you.
Thanks a lot, fellas.
And all right, that will wrap up the show. Thank you to all the listeners for tuning in again this episode. We hope you enjoyed it. Make sure to check out both of our personal platforms, fantasydugout.com and toolshedfantasy.com for more work from each of us. And join us again next time. But until then, everyone take care.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger-licking good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.